Welcome to the Farm Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department of the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for federal government attorneys navigating the complex intersection of acquisitions and fiscal law and policy. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
And I am Lieutenant Colonel Matt Firing.
And I'm Major Ed Callahan. Together, we are your co-hosts. Today, we're peeling back the layers of federal fiscal control. When Congress appropriates money, it doesn't just hand over a blank check. There are strict rules governing how and when that money can be spent. To help us understand some of these risks, we have with us Lieutenant Colonel Matt Firing.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, sir. Let's start with the big picture. How does Congress use appropriations to exercise control over the executive branch?
Well, at the highest level, the law says that all obligations or expenditures by federal agencies must satisfy three requirements of availability: purpose, time, and amount, often summarized as the PTA rules. If an expense fails any of these tests, it could run afoul of appropriations law, and most importantly, the cornerstone of controlling spending, the Anti-Deficiency Act, commonly referred to as the ADA. This act essentially prohibits officials from obligating or spending money in advance or in excess of appropriations.
So, the ADA prohibits the executive branch from spending before Congress makes funds available or in excess of what Congress makes available. Got it. So, how does the Impoundment Control Act fit into that?
So, the Impoundment Control Act, or the ICA, is really the opposite end of the spectrum of control. So, if the ADA says, don't spend money we didn't give you, the ICA, the Impoundment Control Act, says you have to spend the money we gave you, with some exceptions, of course.
So the two acts function as sort of bookends to the appropriations process.
Exactly. The Anti-Deficiency Act governs the maximum spending requirement that you can't overspend or spend in a manner inconsistent with law. But the ICA governs the opposite. Attempts by the executive branch to withhold or delay funds that Congress mandated be spent.
And that makes sense, because after all, appropriations are laws.
Okay, but what even is an impoundment?
Okay, so an impoundment is defined by the Government Accountability Office as an action or inaction by an officer or employee of the United States that delays or precludes the obligation or expenditure of budget authority provided by Congress.
I love history. So I'm guessing there is a reason why this was passed. So what is the history behind the ICA's passage?
Yeah, the ICA was passed as Title 10 of the Congressional Budget and Impoundment Control Act of 1974 in response to an interbranch dispute in the early 1970s related to the impoundment by President Nixon of billions of dollars of funds that Congress had appropriated. But even before that, presidents had long impounded without much controversy. Typically, the purpose of the impoundment was to save money based on the efficient use of public funds. For example, in President Jefferson's third address to Congress, he told them that he impounded $50,000 that was appropriated to buy gunboats. He explained that he didn't have to use those funds because he avoided the hostilities with France by purchasing Louisiana Territory. The Nixon impoundment, well, those were a little different. They were the first set of controversial impoundments, thereby leading Congress to pass the ICA.
Okay, that's interesting. So it sounds like there's some historical practice involved here before Congress stepped in to decide the matter. How does the ICA, well, I guess, control the impoundments?
Well, first, the ICA had to amend the ADA. Formally, so in the past, the ADA used to permit the establishment of reserves of appropriations for various causes, including to save money, to essentially effectuate savings. So Congress permitted explicitly impoundments before the ICA. The ADA was amended by the ICA, but to essentially prohibit these reserves. Second, the ICA created two distinct concepts, deferrals and rescissions.
All right, sir, can you explain to us what the difference between a deferral and a rescission would be?
So first, a deferral is a temporary withholding or delay of funds from obligation or expenditure. Importantly, deferrals are highly restricted. They are authorized only to provide for contingencies to achieve savings made possible by changes in requirements or greater efficiency of operations or as otherwise provided for by law. Deferrals for policy reasons are not authorized, according to the Government Accountability Office. If the president defers funds, he is required to submit a special message to Congress reporting that deferral, and it cannot be proposed for a period beyond the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, so I understand what a deferral is. What is a rescission?
The rescission proposal is a proposal by the president to permanently cancel budget authority previously provided. A rescission can only be accomplished through legislation enacted by Congress.
That makes sense. Since an appropriation is a law, it only makes sense that a subsequent law can only rescind the prior one.
So if the executive sends that notification, what happens after that, sir?
Congress essentially has 45 days during which they can rescind the funding before the executive is required to proceed with obligating those funds. During this time, the executive branch is temporarily relieved from executing the appropriations law, namely obligating those funds.
Okay. Is that related to the litigation we've been hearing about, pocket rescissions?
Yes, definitely, right? So a pocket rescission it's not a statutory term. It's more of a colloquialism used to describe what happens when the executive branch provides a rescission proposal so late in the fiscal year or the fund's period of availability that there is insufficient time during which Congress can come back and tell the executive to spend that money or not to act on that rescission proposal, essentially. Like I said, the executive branch gets relief from spending those funds during the 45-day window after a rescission notice is sent. So if that notice is sent within the 45 days before the appropriation expires, then the argument goes that the money need never be spent.
Okay, I get it. And that's why they'd call that a pocket rescission, kind of in the same lines as they'd refer to pocket vetoes that don't go down the full official route. But is that the only thing that they use in litigation now? Is that the only thing that the ICA is being challenged on?
Yeah, there's definitely more issues. And honestly, most have not been resolved by the courts, right? So I'd say there's several issues with the ICA pending judicial determinations. One being the ICA, is this thing constitutional to begin with, right? Because we all know Constitution dictates the end of the day. As we know, Article 2 vests the executive branch in the president and charges the president to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. Historically, they have meant that the president gets wide deference in determining the priority and extent of federal programs. Those are the Executive Vesting Clause and the Take Care Clause. The question is whether Congress's mandate to make the president spend money is an infringement on this discretion afforded to the president through a combination of these clauses. Finally, and because we're members of the Department of War, the President's Commander-in-Chief Clause might come into play with respect to defense spending and foreign affairs powers, which the Supreme Court has been very clear has given the President wide latitude in those affairs.
All right, that makes sense. So in the separation of powers, you don't want to have Congress dictating what the President or the Commander-in-Chief can and can't do.
So are there any statutory issues then?
Well, another issue is, what exactly is an impoundment? According to the GAO, who's essentially charged with interpreting what an impoundment is or is not, just because the executive branch, according to the GAO, does not make funds available for obligation, GAO's opinion is not necessarily an impoundment. First, most appropriations are written permissively. So when Congress says that an agency can spend up to, for example, $1 million for a particular purpose, that appropriation may be seen as discretionary instead of mandatory. Other appropriations explicitly require a specific official make a determination before those funds are spent. So if the official fails to make that determination, well, is that truly an impoundment? Maybe not. But the GAO has also listed other examples by which something would not be tantamount to an impoundment. For example, ineffective administration of the funds. So if the executive branch is just inefficient in executing those funds, that would not be considered an impoundment according to the GAO. Likewise, unwise program administration, improper obligation, mere failure to obligate a full amount are just some of the other reasons that GAO would say is not considered an impoundment. And what the GAO would call these, and oftentimes, is something called a programmatic delay. Still, an intentional non-obligation of funds for policy reasons would trigger the Impoundment Control Act, according to the GAO.
So the questions that we're looking at here, or the issues that we're looking at here, really are at the high executive level. If I'm advising a commander, as we all probably have in August and September, I always advise on the availability of funds, so not to exceed what we have. But I've never advised on, and make sure you spend it all, otherwise this could be in violation of the Impoundment Control Act. We're saying the issues here aren't down for low-level commands. This is an executive policy-level concern, not just a you didn't spend every dollar we gave you. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely, right? So these are issues that are being resolved at the White House OMB level, because ultimately they're going to be the adjudicators of deciding whether or not they're making funds available for the respective agencies to obligate, which ultimately will implicate the ICA.
Okay, so there's a lot of potential questions here to sort out, and it all sounds pretty nuanced.
It definitely is, right? And the GAO takes a very fact-specific approach, looking at the purpose of the pause, length of the pause, surrounding circumstances of the pause, historical apportionment, and obligation data. And those are all clearly factors that they've considered in recent opinions that the GAO has issued.
So that's the formal process. But if we take a step back from that a little bit, what happens if they impound funds, they being the executive branch in this scenario, without reporting it or improperly classify the action in the notification?
And that's an interesting aspect to this, right? So that's where the comptroller and the GAO step in. And the GAO is required by law to monitor the executive branch's performance in reporting these actions. The comptroller must review each special message and present views to Congress. And when I say special message, I mean essentially a rescission or deferral proposal. Furthermore, if the executive branch fails to release funds required by the ICA or does not make those funds available for obligation, the comptroller is authorized to bring actual civil suit in district court to require the executive branch to make that budget authority made available.
Has there actually ever been a civil action then?
All right, well, first, let's provide some context here, right? So according to GAO, historically, from 1975 to 2002, there were 239 special messages. What do I mean by special messages? These were instances by which the executive branch submitted requests to Congress for a deferral or rescission. So that occurred 239 times. None of these special messages occurred again until 2018, right? And there were only six then. They've become a lot less frequent, I would say.
So because of that, the Comptroller General's never actually had to bring a suit?
Well, not necessarily. The GAO did sue the executive branch once, using its authority granted under the ICA. So in 1975, just 1 year after the ICA's enactment, the comptroller sued President Ford over his impoundment of $264 million for a subsidized housing program. President Nixon was actually the one who directed the suspension of the program, but Ford continued the suspension and withheld. In the ensuing litigation, the executive branch argued for dismissal on constitutional grounds. The court rejected its arguments and granted preliminary relief. However, the party settled, so the Supreme Court actually has never weighed in on the legality or constitutionality of the ICA.
Sir, we've seen some of these issues in the headlines these days. Do you know of any pending litigation or any suits that are being filed currently?
Currently, GAO is actively issuing opinions related to special messages, whether it be deferrals or rescission requests, or monitoring to see whether or not the executive branch is improperly impounding funds. But currently, there is nothing before an actual district or appellate court, or the Supreme Court for that matter.
All right. Sounds like something worth paying attention to this podcast for, as we'll make sure we continually update on any changes in this topic. Lieutenant Colonel Fiering, thank you for talking us through the Impoundment Control Act and explaining how Congress maintains control over the execution of budget authority. I think this is a lesser-known area of law, certainly for me it is. It is complex and definitely an interesting aspect to appropriations law and the fiscal community. We appreciate you taking the time to come down and talk to us, sir.
Happy to come.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
We love to hear from our listeners, not all of you, but most of you. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode.
The views expressed here today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.